was the show before Christmas, when all through the house no hardware was glowing, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the PC with care, in the hopes that Mark Shuttleworth soon would be there.
Presenters nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of 10:04 danced in their heads, and Popey in his nightgown, and Dave in his cap, we just settled our brains for a long winter's nap.
When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a Russian Soyuz and 8 eager reindeer.
With a dashing young driver so full of largesse, I knew in a moment it must be Mark S. His reindeer charged onwards, their eyes all aflame, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Castro, now Holbeck, now Remnant and Bacon, on Langridge, on Spencer, on Zimmerman and Watson. Let's make this distro its users enthrall, find bugs in Ubuntu, we must solve them all.
He sprang to his capsule, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Welcome to the final episode of Season 2 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. We're here with mince pies and mulled wine to celebrate it being Christmas. And it's Monday the 21st of December. In this episode, we're going to play the final interview from UDS, which is with Steve Spurley from Freescale. We'll do the typical end-of-year wrap-up with our thoughts about next year. And we will, of course, cover the latest news, events, ecosphere and feedback. I'm Laura, and this week with me are...
A pretty much empty house.
It's a lot of mince pies.
Yeah.
Yippee.
I think we're up to the job, though. So I'm Tony.
I'm Simon.
And where are the other two?
They couldn't be bothered.
something about a couple of flakes of snow fell, and that was it enough, apparently.
It was just too much for them.
Dave's car packed in.
Driving it far too fast and blew his turbo up.
I think Alan just fancied an evening at home with his feet up.
It's just too cold out.
Just too cold. Anyway, so what have you been doing, Laura?
I've installed Karmic Fresh on my work laptop.
Karmic Fresh?
Karmic.
I
freshly installed Karmic on my work laptop. And it mostly seems to work. I can't play media very well on it. And then I upgraded my home laptop, which I've upgraded twice, I think, now. To Karmic, and that again seems to be fine. I haven't tried sound or anything on it yet.
Oh, but both the upgrades or the reinstalls went all right?
The actual upgrade and reinstall both went fine.
Excellent. And did you do the upgrade using the upgrade GUI tool thing?
Yes, I think so. But using our mirror, app mirror.
Yeah. Okay, cool. What about you, Simon?
I just had a week off work.
That sounds nice.
Which was very nice. But
so you've been doing computer stuff for the whole week?
I've been sat at my laptop all week. At the beginning of the week, the guys at lug.org.uk needed a bit of work doing. And I said, well, I've got a week off. What do you want doing? So I've been madly at the command line after the last episode saying I wanted to get away from the command line and use the GUI. I've just been mad on the command line for the last week, getting in and working on the domain, on the servers, and getting the work backload sorted.
So you've been doing a lot of system administration stuff?
Yeah, and doing things that I never normally do, sort of user mod type stuff and restricting access to different home paths and SCP only rather than full shell access.
Cool. So people who've been had some requests that have been a bit of a backlog and you've kind of been working your way through them.
Yeah, the problem with obviously the organisation is it's all volunteers and everybody's busy.
Yeah.
And it just gets missed. And there's been a bit of a backlog, so I've been clearing it. And hopefully, by the end of the holidays, it will all be gone.
Excellent. Well, there'll be a Happy New Year present for for the good denizens of log.org.uk, I'm sure.
What about you, mate? Have you been busy?
Yeah. I passed my second essay.
Yay!
Well, so there's only 7 more to go, one of which is due in just after Christmas. But, you know, let's not worry about that today.
Fun sat typing.
Yeah, exactly. You know. But I've just started work on the Lug Radio Live videos from October as well.
How's that going?
It's going well, actually. A few audio problems. but basically, I'm trying to remember my way through the workflow of getting them all done and what I do to get them there and put the slides in and everything. But it's the first time I've used the newer versions of things like KDN Live that are in Karmic. Yeah. So, yeah, getting to use some of the new features there and find what's changed and what have you. But, yeah,
good. You got a deadline for that, or are you just going to get it done when it's done?
Just when it's done. Okay. Just when it's done. I'll do all the talk ones first, and I think Jono's working on the audio of the live show, so once that's out, I can do the video version.
Cool.
But, yeah, that's all good fun. But, yeah, so we should actually say that this is the last episode of this season. So we will be back in the new year in sort of February, March time, a couple of months off, and... this is your notice. Please pay attention. Because last time we ended the season, we said right at the very end of the episode, I don't think people listen all the way through, and they missed it, and they sent us a lot of emails saying, when are you coming back? So yeah, last episode of the season, alert, awooga, awooga. Come back and listen to us in February or use the RSS feed. Anyway, so it sounds like a fun pat last episode.
Okay, I'm here with Steve Spurley from Freescale. Can you tell us a little bit about what Freescale does and where we will have heard of you and what you guys do?
Sure. Freescale is a semiconductor manufacturer, and that's commonly called chips. We make chips that go into various electronic devices that people use. Most of our chips are very useful in devices like cars and networking. You know, cars like Ford, for instance, use the SYNC methodology to be able to speak to the system and have it tell you directions and such. That's based on the Freescale ATmex31 processor. We also create chips that are used in the backbone to run the internet. Cisco uses a lot of our chips, so almost all of your web browsing passes through a Freescale chip at one time. And then we also create devices that are used in industrial products and home appliances like refrigerators, washers, and dryers. And then, again, the part that I'm involved in is what we call consumer products for smart books, and those are specifically devices that are similar to notebook computers and similar to smartphones, but they kind of fall in between there. They're a little bit bigger than a smartphone and have better resolution than a smartphone. But in terms of comparison to a netbook computer, they have longer battery life and faster response in terms of instant on. So it's that's the area that I look at.
And in terms of those smart books, are they based on Intel-style architecture, or are they completely different architecture? Will they run software that people are familiar with, or completely different software?
Well, the architecture itself is based on the ARM intellectual property, and Freescale takes that and creates a chip on it. In terms of the software, the examples of software are Ubuntu, for one, and then all the applications that go on Ubuntu, Linux, and we support other environments also. Some of our devices, as I mentioned, the Ford SYNC happens to use some Microsoft software, and you know, there are other instantiations where there's real-time operating systems, but the software is beautiful in that you can use it to do anything that you want. And one of the partners that we work with very closely is Canonical with their Ubuntu Linux distribution. And that's the primary one that we introduced when we first entered the smart book market, was the Ubuntu.
And is that available on a device now? Can I you know, buy a device that has Ubuntu pre-installed?
Well, the first smart book device introduced in the world was actually from Sharp. They introduced it in August of 2009 of this year and announced it then, and they started shipping it in September. So that device is available in Japan. I'm hoping that it'll be available in other locations, but I don't have dates for that yet. There are other devices that Freescale and other companies that Freescale is working with that will be announcing products and having them be available, I hope, later this year, but for certain early 2010.
And one of the things that a lot of people are after in their smart book or netbook style device is that panacea of having something that has a battery life that lasts almost forever and excellent computing power and the ability to play videos. And can we see those kind of things delivered with Freescale architecture?
Well, that's one of the main strengths of our chip, is that we've designed it from the ground up to be a battery-operated device. And it, in addition to having a very high-performance ARM-based processor, we also have co-processors that can be used to provide outstanding performance and accelerate graphics, 2D graphics and 3D graphics, and also video, movies, and run those at high performance but also at very low power consumption. In fact, when you're running a video, the CPU, the processor, CPU portion of the processor essentially goes to sleep because all the hard work is being done by the video coprocessor. So we can have very long battery life when you're playing a video, but also because it's specifically designed to do video decode, you get fabulous video decoding capabilities. So it is the best combination of those two worlds, great performance and long battery life.
And so at the moment we're looking at the, is it the ARM Cortex-8 kind of reference design, or are we looking beyond that next year to other more powerful, different designs?
Well, the devices that are being introduced this year are based on the A8. Mm-hmm. And that's performing very well for us. We are very happy with that, and we'll have additional devices that come out based on A8 next year, and then you'll also see eventually A9. Type devices, but we're not announcing anything specifically today about that.
Okay. And you have a partnership with Canonical. Does that mean you're providing hardware to Canonical for their developers to work on to get the best out of the hardware with our software?
So exactly. We first engaged with Canonical in 2008. So we've been working with Canonical for over a year now. We provided them with hardware ever since then. That's one of the key requirements for them. For Canonical to do any work, is they have to have a hardware platform. And Freescale, as a function of our deliverable, in addition to hardware, we provide a board support package. So the initial load of software with the drivers that give you access to the various coprocessors is a deliverable from Freescale to Canonical. So we want to make sure that you get the very best possible performance and power management there, and we use our experts in those fields to deliver those drivers to Canonical as a base that Canonical then adds the Ubuntu distribution on top of and takes advantage of those accelerators.
And another device that I've seen, you mentioned the Sharp device, another one that's been seen around the place is the Pegatron device. Can you tell us a little bit about the specification on that device and what it's capable of?
Sure. The Sharp is called the NetWalker PC-Z1. It was the one that was announced in August and started shipping in September. It has a 5-inch touch screen on it with a very high resolution, 1024x600. And in addition, it has, that 5-inch form factor is very pocketable. And it's a clamshell form factor, so you've got a screen, the touch screen, plus a keyboard. It's more, I guess, a thumb board because of the size, and it is set up so you can very easily use it with two hands. Instead of using a 10-finger typing, you use your thumb typing like you would on a BlackBerry or some other type of cell phone-based keyboard. So it's very appropriate for doing email and texting, and I think it's a really great form factor from the standpoint of it's very easy to carry with you and has a great battery life with it, but it's got a screen resolution on it that allows you to do real web browsing and to get a great movie playback experience at the same time.
And it's a full desktop operating system rather than being a limited mobile device that you might have a limited platform on a mobile, for example.
Precisely. It is the Ubuntu distribution customized by Canonical for Sharp, just like they do for other major OEMs.
And so we're looking at more devices, more netbooks, more smartbooks in beginning part of 2010?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. Thanks for talking to us.
You're more than welcome. It's my pleasure.
Here are some news and some events.
Mark Shuttleworth is stepping down as Canonical CEO from March next year to concentrate on design and usability aspects of Ubuntu. Current COO, Jane Silber, will take over as CEO.
Yeah, quite a big news article, this one. Good thing or a bad thing? Simon, you look sceptical.
I'm sceptical. I don't believe that she's going to have much fun, to be honest. He is the main man. I'm sure he will watch over her and micromanage her. I can't believe he's going to step aside completely and let it crack on.
But I read the article and it says about how there'd be a smooth transition, and I kind of suspect that maybe that's the way they're working already.
Yeah, I get that impression. I mean, she's in charge of the day-to-day operations anyway, Jane.
Yeah, he'll do the sort of the interesting fun bits as they come along. That's his...
And I guess when you've got that amount of money, it's your prerogative,
exactly.
Really. I mean, he's not, certainly not sort of handing over ownership of the company, so he'll still have, you know, ownership-type control.
Just big screwdriver.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, no, so that's from March, as I say, March next year, isn't it? Quite a big change.
I suppose it'll be good. I mean, he's obviously feeling restricted by his position, and he just wants to sort of get back into the guts of it and make change and make sure that the T-shirts are the right colour and stuff.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
The Software Freedom Law Centre has filed lawsuits against 14 technology companies claiming they've violated the GPL by including the BusyBox software in their devices without offering access to the source code. The companies named include Samsung, JVC and Best Buy. BusyBox, that's the one. However, open source developer Bruce Perrins claims he holds the copyright of most of the code in the disputed versions of BusyBox and was not consulted by the SFLC about the suit.
Interesting.
This is another one of those GPL test cases that everybody gets very excited about and usually ends up being settled out of court before it comes to trial.
Yeah, I mean, I know the way the GPL describes it, they must provide the source code with it. But I suppose if there's no reference to it, you know, you can go and get the source code over there rather than here it is.
Well, most people just stick it on their website. Yeah. That's what some companies like Sony and stuff do. They've just got an open source code page, and anybody who gets the TV with something embedded, it'll say in the back of the manual, go to this URL to get the source code if you want to. And nobody really worries about it because that meets the terms of the GPL. So it's a fairly low overhead thing for companies to do.
The code of a collaborative web-based real-time text editor, Etherpad, has been released under the Apache license and been bought by Google. Not a bad day's work.
Yeah. It's been promised to have released for a while, I think, and they've sort of finally got it out there. Yeah.
What is it?
It's a collaborative web-based real-time text editor. So it's like multiplayer Notepad.
Oh, okay. Like Gobby.
Yeah, a bit like Gobby, but in a web-based form.
Oh, right. Sorry, yeah. Okay.
So you give somebody a URL to a unique pad, I guess, and anybody can just join in. They sort of identify your contributions by colour. It's very much like Gobby, but on the web.
Cool.
It is. It's useful. You should try it sometime, Tony.
I have tried Etherpad.
Have you?
Yeah. But apparently it's a bit of a conflict with the people behind Wave, of course, because it's a similar collaborative platform. So I'm not quite sure what will happen with that in the future.
I think the difference between Wave and Etherpad is that with Wave, you've got to go through all the noise of getting a Wave account and getting sort of dragged into the Wave itself, whereas with Etherpad, you just pass somebody the URL and you crack on. So it'll be another string to the bow, I'm sure, rather than just competing with Wave.
Yeah, and now people can set up their own Etherpad servers. They're not dependent on a central service for it like they are with Wave.
Well, that was part of the attraction. Because, I mean, I know we do choice, but Gobby and Etherpad will effectively become very similar. If you've got to set it up on your server, then the appeal for me was the fact that it was at Etherpad and you didn't need to mess around with servers.
That's no hassle, I guess.
Eben Moglen has written a blog post about the Oracle and Sun EU hearings, in which he says that the GPL itself is sufficient protection for MySQL and that the merger is no threat to it.
Yeah, which is, I think, not what people were expecting him to say. A lot of the EU, the contributions to the EU hearings have been about Oracle being too big and they will anti-competitively squash MySQL and in favour of their big proprietary database and blah, 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 the world was going to end. But what Eben Moglen says, and remembering he is a lawyer, so he's one of those people that doesn't have to put those five letters after his name, is that the GPL is fine. I think what people are worrying about is whether there is enough industry support for a fork to make it commercially viable, and he doesn't really address that so much because he's looking at it very much from a point of view of the source code, and he's right, the GPL does protect it in that respect.
Great.
ABI Research has published a paper that says that Linux has a 32% share of the netbook market and predicts that Linux will overtake Windows by 2013. Microsoft says that 93% of netbooks run Windows, so those numbers don't quite add up. Well, originally, presumably, Linux had 100% of the netbook market and has then gone back down to either 7% or 32%, depending on whose numbers you believe.
As a random sample of netbooks in this room.
Yes, this highly scientific, neutrally sampled audience. Go on.
Linux has 100% share of the netbook market.
Let's write a report and publish it on the internet.
I think that we should.
Yeah, but nobody listens to stats, because stats just prove you what you want them to prove. So, yeah, whatever. Bah, humbug.
Let's have a look at the events that are coming up.
I'm looking. Oh, you want me to talk about them?
Yes, right. Please.
23rd of January is the Ubuntu User Day. It's online in #Ubuntu...
Dash Classroom.
Indeed. Around midday, or in fact from midday onwards on the day.
Okay, and what's it about?
The User Day... Right, I'll read it. The User Day is aimed at new users to Ubuntu and Linux and will cover topics such as switching to Ubuntu, how to get help, command line basics, and equivalent programs in Linux to what they may be used to in Windows or Mac OS.
Cool. That sounds like a good idea. 23rd of January. Hope it's a really good event. And there is, of course, the one and only FOSDEM on the 6th or 7th of February 2010 at the University of Libre in good old Bursals. And it seems that our typo has crept back in again onto our little list of events.
So there's anyone on the planet who doesn't know when FOSDEM is now?
I hope not. Basically, look at it this way. It'll be the last time we'll mention it, because by the time we've come back, it will be over. But if you're going, you should tweet us at, or dent us at UUPC, and say you're going, and
we can have a tweet up.
Yeah, and all the UUPC listeners can buy us beer.
We really should book the hotel.
Yeah, well, actually, we should establish whether we're going. Yeah, that's the
yeah.
And how are we going to get there? If they don't sort the trains out,
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe they need to knit a giant scarf for the Eurostar.
It's the Southern California Linux Expo on the 19th to 21st of February.
And we have a trailer.
Whether you've only heard of Linux or if you're an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2010, Scale has expanded to 5 speaker tracks. The expo now includes a beginner's track for those new to Linux and a developer's track for the coders out there. Scale will have over 50 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source, and the expo floor will have over 80 booths, with both commercial and nonprofit organizations showing off their products and software. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 19th, 20th, and 21st, 2010, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit SoCalLinuxExpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration. We'll see you at Scale 8X.
Wow. Well, I think it was great of Status Quo to do the backing music for that.
Pretty impressive.
I was surprised they were available. But anyway, yeah, that sounds good. And that's about it for the events. It's traditional at this time of year to predict what's going to happen in the coming 12 months. I know this. You know, the other shows do the same sort of thing, so apparently it's the law. We have to do it as well. So what have your highlights been from the last year? What do you think you'll see next year? Or what would you like to see happen? Laura?
It's not so much a prediction as a kind of wish list idea.
Okay, go for it.
In that a lot of people have whinged about sound on Linux, mm-hmm. Myself included. And I think it'd be really good for Ubuntu if Canonical would sponsor a project to draw it all together, to make it work, whatever needs doing, sort of put some muscle behind it and really just drag it into shape and get it working.
Do you think that's one of the problems at the moment, is that it's a bit disparate?
I don't actually know what the problems are at the moment. Mm. But I think I get the impression there's lots of different bits of projects and or things just don't hook together. I know when I look at the sound settings, I have no idea what I'm selecting. It's just trial and error. And I think if Canonical, it may be not a money issue so much as just having somebody specifically focus on it.
Yeah, I don't know whether other distros have the same sort of problem as that, but it is a big thing.
You just thought they must do, but...
And they certainly have thrown investment at other places, you know, specifically targeted in previous releases. So, yeah, I can see that happening.
Well, it's massive, isn't it? Mm. I mean, if you a new user coming to Ubuntu and you load it up, even if it's just the live CD, and your sound doesn't work, that disk's going in the bin. It really needs to be fixed.
And it's not just sort of the out-of-box sound. It's when you start one application and then you start another application and then another application says, oh, I can't use sound because it's being used by something else. It's like, I don't care, just make it work. It's that kind of slickness we need.
Okay, cool. Go on then, Simon. What?
I'm sat here racking my brain.
Over to you.
Yeah.
You seem quite confident before.
I am confident about next year. I think it certainly isn't going to be the year of the Linux desktop, which we've just been chuckling about. But I think it probably will be more of the year of the Linux phone. We've certainly seen that this year. You know, Android is forging ahead, and I'm desperate to get my hero. but I think I think we're going to see more of Linux phones on the market.
Well, Google have got their new phone due out next year.
January, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's early, yeah. I don't know if it's going to reach the UK in January, but apparently they were giving them out at Google in San Francisco to Googlers.
Really?
Yeah. Cool. Unlocked as well. I know they've been talking to Vodafone and one of the other networks, Orange, I think, in the UK. Yeah, hopefully it's not going to be an iPhone job where it's only on one or two networks.
I think that should be illegal.
Well, it was a big money machine, wasn't it?
But, it's monopoly. You know? I don't like it.
For me, I think that my wish for next year would be more advocacy, to see Linux seen by more of the population, for them to understand what it is, not necessarily Ubuntu, although more people see Linux and they're going to go straight to Ubuntu. That is the distro of choice, of course. But I just want more of the general public to see Linux and not just the geeks and the nerds. Obviously, we've seen it on the BBC this year. I think we're going to see more and more of that.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Have we anything from the Twitter sphere or the Identica?
No, the one that you said about the year of the Linux desktop was from Open Sorcerer. Elliot JH says, less visible Linux on the netbook, but more around in general devices that run Linux but don't show it, like smartphones and simplified netbooks. That's his prediction. Liam GH says, it would be great to see more machines with Ubuntu pre-installed. Would really help get new people into Linux.
Yep,
Good idea. Sure.
Sir William says, more games, open source or not, will run on Linux. He says, I hope.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. Techno Viking says 2010 will be the year of the Linux desktop. Not really. Honest this time.
Yes. First of many people saying the same thing, I suspect.
Yes. And Pyrus on Identica says, I hope the clever folks could sort out the flash and sound issues on Linux.
Where are those clever folks when you need them, eh? And joining us on the phone from Snowy Farnborough is Sir Alan of Pope.
Do you know, I'd love it if it really was snowy.
Oh, right.
It's not. It's just slippery and icy and horrible.
Oh, makes it sound miserable. Have you got mince pies there?
No. Oh, yes. Yes, I have. Yeah, a package from the Transvaal arrived today, and you have mince pies there.
Did you have homemade brandy butter?
I haven't yet.
Oh, man. You've missed it.
We have. But, yeah, so we're very sorry you couldn't be down here, but you've got some predictions or something for us, I think.
Yeah, I noticed Simon said that he expected next year to be the kind of year of the Linux phone, rather than, you know, the year of the Linux desktop that everyone keeps saying.
Yeah.
But I reckon it's going to be more the netbook. I think we're going to see more and more of these netbooks, both x86, Intel architecture, and ARM. And the fact that the sales figures you mentioned in the news talk about, say, 30% of total PC sales is netbooks, and of that, 30% are Linux, says to me we've got a good 10% of the market, and I think we're going to grow from there.
Yeah, cool. ARM will certainly help that, won't it, with the battery life that they're predicting.
Yeah, and the fact that the only other option, if you've got an ARM, the only other operating system you can put on there, if it's not Linux, is going to be Windows CE, or I guess Android, perhaps.
Cool. So are you prepared to put your money where your mouth is and come up with a number?
Number of what?
A percentage of the market we'll have this time next year?
More than 10%. There you go.
Yeah. That's a very loose number, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Everyone else says we've got, like, less than 1%. I reckon it's going to be more than 10%.
Cool.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Excellent. So have you got any particular highlights from the last year?
Yeah, well, what, in terms of podcasting or...
Yeah, whatever.
Linux, everything.
Open source, which UDS or something like that?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed UDS this time. I think I found it more enjoyable than the previous UDSs because I think more got done. And I think as a result of it was a more aggressive schedule at UDS, so I think Lucid Links 10.04 is going to be pretty good. From what I've seen of just the plans of 1004, I think that's going to be pretty good. But I still don't think it's enough to sway a lot of people. I still think there's going to be plenty of people out there who still disregard Ubuntu as an option. And I think we still just have to keep plugging away and, you know, chipping away at those people and trying our best, you know, not ramming it down their throat, but, you know, just letting them know that we're still here and we're still putting out a release every 6 months. I think last year was good. Maybe we could have done some things better. As Laura said, perhaps sound could have been better. You know, we have a few issues with the Linux desktop.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we're getting better.
And do you know if GNOME 3 is going to be in Lucid and whether it'll have a big impact?
Unlikely.
Right, okay.
I know, I think in the news you mentioned that Mark Shuttleworth has stepped down and isn't taking more a design role. I believe he's doing some major, or involved in doing some major redesign of the GNOME panel. So they may be taking cues from GNOME 3, or, you know, taking elements that are in the design of GNOME 3 and all part of this Aetana project. But I don't see getting a whole new desktop. The GNOME 3 look and feel will be something we'll get anytime soon, because this is a long-term support release and I don't think it's ready for that.
Cool. Well, thank you.
One other thing, I should say, about last year, of course, Og Camp.
Ah, yes.
Our very own Og Camp.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my highlights.
Oh.
No, that's fine. We can share it.
There's enough. Share too.
Well, tell me, Tony, you tell me about your highlight of this year.
Well, I was going to say Og Camp, as long as you don't mind. It was a lot of hard work, but it really did pay off. And still the memory of nipping down to the hotel room and coming back out of the hotel room and seeing the queue was stretching three floors down around these big sort of spiral stairs. It was quite frightening and a little bit overwhelming. But it was great to know that people were actually going to show up. And they're all really keen.
It was good validation, really, for the fact that you put it all together and actually people do want to come to an event like that.
Yeah. But I never thought that we would be in a position that we were organising that sort of event. us as in all individuals with the Linux Outlaws guys as well.
Yeah.
It was strangely satisfying, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and quite scary.
Yeah.
You know, there were a number of times that we, all of us, looked at each other as if to say, oh my God, is this really happening?
Yeah, your scare meter sort of went up throughout the day Saturday and then increased overnight, if I remember, until it reached some sort of a hiatus of midday on Sunday.
Yeah, about the time when my laptop decided to give up the ghost.
Yeah, yeah. Next year we'll do it better. But it was really great. And
sorry, did you say next year? Are you talking about Og Camp next year?
Yeah. I don't think it's unfair to say that we are in the early stages of discussions about what Og Camp next year might be.
Excellent.
Yeah. But yeah, cool. Well, thank you for phoning in with your predictions and highlights.
That's okay. Sorry I can't be there, and thanks for taking over. I think that's one of the things that we have got right in this podcast, is that even if 20% of us don't turn up, I'm trying to do the math.
Yeah.
20% of us don't turn up, it still works.
20, 40, I think it was 40% technically at the moment.
We kind of rely on 20% not turning up, really.
Yeah.
What, so there's enough cups?
Yeah, I had to eat all your mince pies as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, we were at a Christmas party on Saturday night, and a friend of ours referred to the show as Tony and Laura's podcast.
In front of Alan.
In front of Alan. And normally it tends to be Popey's podcast.
Yeah, previously she was quite a good friend.
I really like her. I think she's great.
I think she's
very sensible, yeah. We're not going to let you forget that one in a hurry, that's for sure.
No, I'll be reminded of that.
Okay, mate. Well, go enjoy the rest of your evening, and thanks for dialing in.
Yeah, and have a good Christmas.
Yeah. Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Bye.
See ya. I think the highlight for me was probably seeing those queues of people down the stairs in a dog camp at sort of 10 o'clock in the morning, was it? And not having seen anybody, and then all of a sudden having to push my way back up through the crowds of people. But then also the live raffle at the...
I think the raffle was everybody's highlight last year.
I think, yeah.
Do you know, I've not listened back to it. I started listening to it and I thought, I can't possibly. And I still haven't listened to the raffle.
We listened back to it and I actually said at the end, I surprisingly found that really amusing.
Yeah, I remember, I don't think it's betraying any confidences, that Jono and Ak turned to each other partway through and said, they're not being rude to the people who've won. They're going, it's a different show. They're not us. But yes, the raffle was quite a highlight for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's something else we're going to see more of, more and more shows.
Obviously,
the raffle podcast.
Rafflecast.
Yeah, but more and more people, as more and more people start using it. I mean, I'm into running, and there are just hundreds of running podcasts. Mm. Maybe we're going to see more and more Linux podcasts. Obviously, Shot of Jack's out now. Yeah. Maybe we're going to see other people jumping on that bandwagon as well.
Yeah, I think my prediction is that we will see a short form podcast coming out of the UK very soon in the next couple of months.
Shots of Jack?
Not a Shot of Jack, no, but something sort of, same sort of idea.
Another Shotcast, yeah.
A little bite-sized podcast. Yeah. That's my prediction.
You know something we don't.
No, I know nothing.
Quite evidently. You might know that.
Yes. Oh, well, you have to join us again in December 2010 to see how many of these predictions we got right and see what we think will happen in 2011. This is the bit about Ubuntu.
Let's call it Bauble.
Should we call it Bauble or Rudolph? Call it Rudolph this time. Anyway.
As currently only Tombyte and Evolution sync up with Ubuntu 1, Ars Technica have provided a code tutorial for how to make your application sync with it.
Yeah. If you want to sort of start making your application network aware and to be able to share your data between multiple different machines, it's a good place to start as a bit of a tutorial to get you going, I think.
When you say data, do you mean the configuration files of the applications or the data itself?
Well, with Tomboy, it's the data itself that's shared, isn't it? So you have your Tomboy notes available on all of your different machines and they're automatically synced.
I assume. What would the equivalent maybe that's the address books on Evolution? That sort of
thing. I assume everything other than the mail bit, I guess.
Yeah.
But maybe you can show your whole mail store, I don't know.
Yeah.
But can you save your configurations of all your separate applications? That must be part of this as well. You must, or rather...
Your preferences and things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Ubuntu have only really just started on the applications they want to port to it, but maybe you're a third-party person and would like to get started. It's all about CouchDB and things, and I know I see Stuart Langridge tweet about it all the time, and he seems to like it. I can't pretend to understand it. Microsoft have released an open source version of Silverlight. It's actually called Silverlight 2, which they developed in cooperation with Novell. So it'll enable you to watch unencrypted broadcasts that using Silverlight on Linux and on Ubuntu. It's going to be available in package for Ubuntu, so you can watch things like the Winter Olympics.
So what happens to the other project?
That's a good question. I don't know. Moonlight, yes. Well, I suspect that, Moonlight was, I think, developed at least partly by Novell anyway. So I suspect that they may be quite similar. I don't know whether they actually share any code, but, so there's no DRM engine, though, still. So you still can't watch things like Netflix and other services that stream Silverlight stuff using DRM on them. But, hey, it's a good start. And it's a genuine open source app from Microsoft.
It appears that there's been some progress on native multi-touch support for Linux. The team at ENAC, the Interactive Computer Laboratory, have released a video of some pretty funky stuff going on with multi-touch.
Yeah, so go on, explain what you mean by multi-touch then.
If you have a touch screen, you can obviously do things by putting your finger on the screen or a stylus and interacting directly onto the screen. With multi-touch, you can use two. So you can grab a document...
Two screens or...
With two,
two fingers.
You probably could do it with two screens, actually, but no, two fingers. So you could grab a document with two fingers and interact with it, spin it, move it, drag it.
The more typical application of it is like in adverts where you get a photograph and zoom in using it by dragging your fingers apart.
So this will help Linux make better adverts?
Yes.
So this is the sort of thing, am I right, that the iPods had for a while?
iPhone does it.
iPhone, sorry.
And I guess... if there's anything else touchscreeny in Macs. And the big Microsoft touchscreen desktop things.
Table things. Okay, so this is Linux catching up then, is it?
Maybe it'll be an Android.
Oh, yeah.
Catching up or forging ahead? I mean, it's on other computers. I mean, I don't really consider the iPhone to be a computer. It's a phone.
Yeah, okay.
But, is this the first sort of laptop stroke, in theory, desktop that you can do multi-touch on?
I don't know, but you are seeing more devices with a touchscreen built in these days, sort of small form laptops, that sort of thing.
Yep. Does it take special hardware to do multi-touch over ordinary touch, though?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
Right now, it just appears to work on a certain amount of hardware, which is listed on the website. But, of course, once it gets out there, then other vendors will develop it for their own hardware, hopefully.
Yeah. Mm. No, that would be cool. And it could really help bring things like Mirko Müller's low-fat project they did all those years ago up to, it'll finally give you an interface to be able to use that sort of interface properly. If you see what I mean, I said interface twice, but you know what I mean. It'll give you the ability to use that sort of interface to its fullest extent. That's good.
That'd be good.
I mean, are we moving away from, I'm a great believer in keeping your hands on the keyboard rather than faffing around with a mouse or a trackpad. But with this sort of stuff, we now get to the point where we're going to get rid of the keyboard and just do it all on the screen.
I think it's about finding the right application for it, because I've got a touchscreen phone now, and it's really cool for some things. Like you can do, if you're looking at photos, you can whiz them along by just dragging your finger across the screen, which is actually quite nice to do. But when you're typing in it, I use the on-screen phone keypad, but you have to click through about two or three times to get up to a screen where it'll actually let you enter text.
Yeah.
When it'd be a lot easier just to have a hardware keyboard at that point and just type, and it would appear on the same screen.
If you can get up to the same sort of typing speed on an on-screen keyboard that you do on a hardware keyboard.
My son's got the same phone, and he is lightning fast.
Yeah.
So I suppose, as you say, it just depends what you're used to.
Yeah.
Mm, good stuff. The Ubuntu forums.org facts have been published. I'm not going to read them all out, but basically there's a whole list of different stats about the traffic that Ubuntu forums gets, and some of the headlines are that they get 14,000 new accounts each month, which is a lot.
22,000 new threads a month.
Yeah. And presumably they can't all be spam. but that's really good. 3.7 million visits each month. And unsurprisingly, 74% of visitors use Firefox.
35% of visitors use Windows.
Yeah, that is quite surprising.
Quite interesting.
Yeah. Maybe people have broken their Ubuntu systems, go onto the forums to get help, but have to use their backup Windows system to help them out. But yeah, so it's good to know that the forums are really alive and thriving and getting a whole heap of new users every month. That presumably means more people are using Ubuntu.
Dell are about to release another version of their Inspiron Mini 10, this time with the new Intel Atom N450 processor.
Yeah, which is up at 1.6 gig, as I understand. And it comes with a battery that's supposed to do 9.5 hours of life. Now, and you always really? Be a bit wary about battery stats from manufacturers, but that's still quite a good battery life.
That's impressive.
Even if it's only sort of 2/3 of that, that's pretty good going. And most importantly, of course,
it comes in lots of different colours.
Ah, yes. So it does.
Looks really cool.
Yeah. It also comes with an HD TV tuner and location-aware GPS.
Nice.
Or it will do.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, I want one.
Mm. Yeah. I'm in the market for a new laptop, actually. I may have to hold off.
You are now.
It's got Bluetooth.
Yep. And we'll do HD play. There's an HD screen version coming, which is 1366 by 768. So you'll be able to play back movies and stuff at reasonably high definition. Not 100% high def, but, you know, pretty good.
Ah, it says here, the battery, you get a choice of 3 or 6 cell battery.
That'll be the 6 cell then. The
6 cell, that's with the mobility bundle, so that's an extra. And it does say at the top that you don't get the bulgy back end for that, but I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than a bulgy back
end. And the best news is, of course, is that they come with Ubuntu.
Yay.
Or Windows XP.
7.
Or Windows 7. But they also come with Ubuntu, so that's great. And it's great to see that actually Dell are keeping the Ubuntu part of that market going.
It's good to see.
Yeah.
They look really cool. And the Free Culture Showcase is to get a new set of judges for the next round.
Tony's been sacked.
Yeah, basically, yes. And everybody else who's judged as well. Very nice email from Daniel Holbach saying that just to kind of make things a bit different, stir it up every for the next round, they're going to find a new set of judges.
Keep things fresh.
Absolutely, it's a good idea. And I'm not at all hurt, wounded and betrayed.
Does this mean you can now contribute?
I guess it does. Yeah, I suppose there's no excuse not to now. That's a bad... Thank you, Simon.
It's snowing outside. How we go tomorrow morning, get some photographs taken.
Make a nice big Ubuntu logo in the snow. Actually, no. I've got essays to write. And that's... all that's in the bit about Ubuntu this time.
And it's time for some feedback.
Roger Light emailed,
I thought you might like to know that I've just put a release of my app Mosquito, an open source MQTT broker, online at mosquito.achu.org. I thought you might be interested because it came about as a direct consequence of Andy Stanford Clark's talk on MQTT and his Twittering house at OggCamp. This is something that might not have existed if not for you. So thanks for organising OggCamp, and I hope this goes some way to persuading you to organise it again next year.
That is really cool.
Very.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I'm so proud. And if you have a look at the man pages, we've actually got a thank you at the end of each man page.
Brilliant. So for those who weren't at OggCamp, we have talked to Andy in the past, back in season one, but essentially the MQTT broker was the only bit of proprietary software in the middle of his whole of his tweeting house thing, which was his electricity meter tweeted and his mousetraps tweeted and all this other stuff, so he was able to tweet and tell him information about what was going on in his house. And at OggCamp, he said it's the only bit of proprietary thing in there, and Roger obviously went off and wrote an open source implementation of it.
Good man.
Because the standard is open.
And he did it, like, within days, pretty much.
Yeah. He emailed a couple of weeks ago, and we forgot to include it in the last episode, so sorry about that, Roger. But, it's a really great project, and hopefully he can get some, get some really good use out of it. And if you're interested, go along to the website. And Linux format number 127 has also had a bit of a write-up of OggCamp, and they're trying to encourage us to run it again next year in order to take over from Lug Radio Live. Now, that's not going to happen next year.
Which, again, I think it's really nice of them, because that was just out of the blue, wasn't it?
That's very good.
Yeah, we hadn't bribed them or anything. We didn't write the article ourselves either.
No.
But yeah, thanks, guys.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Chris Blow has emailed to criticise our voicemail service.
Why, oh why, do you have an 0845 number for the show? You preach free software, but ask listeners to make a usually non-free phone call to leave messages. Is this deliberate? If not, could you please provide the landline equivalent, or at least add it to say no to 0870.com? That way you should get more people phoning up.
I still don't get the controversy around this 0845 thing.
It's something to do with the charges to call an 0845
number.
An
0845 number is meant to be local. So you should get local rate charges. But if you ring it, I think if you ring it from a mobile, it costs you more. And of course, all of us use our free call allocation, and you'd in fact pay for it if you did it on your mobile.
Yeah, or something like that. Anyway, basically, it tends to cost more than just calling a direct landline number, but of course it isn't a landline number for us, it's a SIP service that Alan set up, I think.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway,
he's taken flack for it ever
since.
Yeah,
absolutely. Dave and Alan have a bit of a ding-dong about it every so often, and I'm sure one day somebody will set up an alternative one.
Well, it's being done right now. I know that Davey, being the asterisk guru that he is setting up a second number, so we'll have two.
Cool. Okay, well, we probably won't have the details for that to be included in this episode, but hopefully we'll have it for next season. I'm sure Davey is on the case. Cafe Ninja emailed in response to our coverage of Google's DNS service.
Where I live in Italy, and where you live too in the UK, I believe that the police and other enforcement agencies have a daily script which DNS blacklists domains. All national ISPs must, by law, subscribe to that script and cannot elect to not participate. This has all been done in the name of protecting the kids from porn. So when some government official, highly qualified to be sure, puts Wikipedia.com in there to protect the children from album art from the band The Scorpions, the entire service is unavailable. Where here in Italy, it's been proven that they block even politically sensitive sites that are critical of the government. So in my home, we use OpenDNS, not just for the content filtering for the kids, but to make sure that the content isn't broken or hidden from us for political and commercial reasons. Honestly, I trust the crowdsourcing ratings of inappropriate material from OpenDNS much more than the State Police of Italy.
Didn't know about that.
No. Well, I knew such things did exist because... Oh, sorry about that. I knew just such things did exist because I remember us talking about it last season when the Wikipedia thing happened, but it wasn't all ISPs by any stretch. So I don't know, quite what the legal details of that is. But yeah, that was a case of them adding a domain, in this case Wikipedia, to a block list, and nobody could access it.
Whilst you may use the DNS, the sites can still be blocked at an ISP level, can't they? So yeah. Whether you use DNS or not.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a number of different other ways to stop somebody getting access to a site, even if they're not using your DNS service.
Yeah.
You block it by destination IP and all sorts of things. But I guess DNS is probably quite a cheap and easy way to do it.
Yeah, sure. Matt Kopp dented us to ask,
was Tony wearing a bell on a collar in the last episode? It seems like every time he spoke, it started jingling. Kind of festive.
No, I didn't have my bell on during the last recording session.
He had his tail on, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, basically, we have two cats that live here with us, and sometimes they like to get involved in the recording.
Become podcats.
Become podcats, yeah. And they both wear collars. But I do have some bells. That's real jingle bells. Okay. Just the Christmas flavour. But yeah, so no, generally the jingling is the cats.
Simon Weirs wrote in,
in regards to you all saying about slipping in the Free Software song last episode, I think you should finish the season with you all singing the Free Software song. If you don't, I'll be sad.
Well, prepare to be sad, Simon, because we ain't doing it.
I don't even know it.
You don't want to. You're better off.
I've heard it very briefly somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sorry, Simon. No way. And Ashley Rolfe from Viglan has let us know that the famous Viglan MPCL offer is still on and likely to run till March next year. So if you want to get your hands on a tiny Linux box for £79, download Season 1, Episode 11, and find out all the details.
How many downloads have we got of that now? It's ridiculous.
Just tipping 30,000 on that.
Compared with?
Well, some of the other ones in that season are about the same as well, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it's slightly further ahead than the others.
I wonder if they've sold 30,000 Viglans.
I doubt that. I think we'd be sitting in our gold-plated studio by that point, wouldn't we? If they had.
We're not getting a cut.
Well, no, I know, but you know they might buy us one.
And finally, Josh Holland sent us a quick voicemail.
Hi all, this is Josh Holland, or Dutchie, wishing everybody a happy Christmas, or whatever seasonal holiday you're on this year. Thanks.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. Have a good one yourself. And that's the end of your feedback.
That's it. The end of the year. The end of the season.
It is nigh.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone who took part via Twitter and Identica. If you'd like to get hold of us, you can email the show via podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
You can leave us a voicemail in a number of ways. Telephone 0845 508 1986 or VoIP podcast at sip.ubuntu-uk.org. And finally, you can Skype using Ubuntu UK Podcast.
You can send us your comments and get updates from recording sessions on Identica or Twitter, where we are at UUPC.
Alternatively, if you're into RC, you can chat to us via the #Ubuntu-UK-podcast on the Freenode IRC network.
Join our Facebook fan page, search for Ubuntu UK Podcast.
We welcome suggestions, material, tips, reviews, rants, feedback, just a moment, or anything else you want to send us. Please do get in touch.
Thanks also to our network of community mirrors listed on the website.
Well, that really is a lot for this season. We had a great season, really enjoyed it, I think. And I just want to say a quick congratulations to Graham Binns, who we interviewed in a couple of previous episodes, who got married a couple of days ago. Congratulations to you. And yeah, and thanks to my fellow presenters who are here and those who are not. Have you had a good one?
Yeah, it's been fun this year.
Cool.
Yeah.
We'll see you next season. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.